Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The queen conch is an iconic snail that lives in Caribbean waters.
But the popularity of the shells and the tastiness of the meat led them to be overfished.
It's Tuesday, July 16th, and this is Science Friday. I'm SciFri producer Kathleen Davis. You may have seen the shell of a queen conch. They're shiny, pink, and orange, and they can be up to a foot long. Their populations have decreased dramatically over the years, so luckily, marine scientists in Florida and the Bahamas are hard at work to make sure queen conch thrive into the future. Our next guest tagged along with some scientists who are doing this work, and she's here to tell us all about it. Jenny Stiletovich is the environment editor at WLRN in Miami, Florida. Jenny, welcome to Science Friday.
Hey, thanks, Kathleen. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So tell us a little bit about queen conch. I mean, what is it like to be a queen conch these days?
That's right. So in Florida, it means that you are probably pretty lonely. The state used to have this really booming population. That's why, like you said, the Keys are called the Conch Republic. But the popularity of the shells and the tastiness of the meat led them to be overfished. That wiped out these big herds of conchs and left these much smaller aggregations. And because there are so few, these slow-moving conchs had a hard time finding each other, which meant that their numbers continued to drop.
Okay, so you mentioned that the overfishing has been a problem. What else are their biggest threats?
Right. So because they're not just overfished here in Florida, they were overfished everywhere. And that meant that what they call the larval train, which is basically the Caribbean-wide currents that carry baby conchs from one place to another, got interrupted. And when there were fewer supplies of babies, it caused not just our population to plummet, but others as well. So there's that derailed larval train that's a problem. And then the other thing is climate change. As waters warm, scientists found that it's harder for conch to reproduce. And also hurricanes are more intense. A hurricane can carry huge amounts of sediment that actually bury the conch. In the Keys, when Hurricane Irma hit in 2017, it buried 80% of the conch that they were monitoring, and the number still hadn't rebounded when Ian hit in 2022. So combination warm waters and more intense hurricanes are a big problem.
Okay, so you went on a boat with researchers and you helped play matchmaker for queen conch. So tell me what that experience was like.
Right. So this was part of a year-long project by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission to see if they can move these inshore conchs in hotter water to deeper, cooler water can help boost the population. Back in 2000, they discovered that these inshore conchs weren't reproducing, and they started to look into why. First, they thought that it had something to do with pollution because they were close to shore. And in the Keys, canals crisscross the Keys, and that water is, filled with dirt from or pollution from restaurants and industrial uses. The Keys relied on leaky septic tanks until recently. And so all that pollution washed into the canals. But it turned out that it was not pollution. And so then they opened up the conchs to look at their brains and discovered that they seemed to be chronically stressed. And they connected that to this hotter water. So I went out with this conch scientist, Gabriel Delgado, and his colleagues at the state's lab in Marathon, which is not that far from the 7 Mile Bridge that connects the Upper Keys to the Lower Keys. And it was a really windy and choppy day.
So if memory serves, they're going to be in this shallow area over here.
So it was about a 15-minute, very bumpy boat ride to the small key near the bridge where they'd scouted out some conchs. There were two boats there, and so the scientists jumped off the boats, got in the water, and snorkeled over to the shallow water where they loaded up about 40 adult conchs that they'd found in big blue milk crates.
Oh, wow. Okay, so how do you actually, set up these conchs reproductively? Is there, a compatibility test that you do or something like that?
So they actually don't seem to be very picky about hooking up. The only requirement they have is that they be close together. They don't move very far, maybe 6 to 10 feet during the day. So if they're too spread out, they can't find each other. So that's one of the things that they're going to do with this relocation is put the conchs closer together offshore in deeper water and see if they can get the population to rebound. One of the things they want to look at is if the relocated conchs actually get along with their new companions or if they're going to wander away or if they have some kind of homing instinct and try and get back to where they were found. Although in the Keys, that's going to be kind of difficult because there's a deep channel that separates the inshore and the offshore conchs and the conchs use a foot to kind of pole vault their way along the bottom, and if it's too mucky, then they can't move.
So did these scientists figure out why the temperature made the conchs stop reproducing?
Well, they think that it's essentially chronic stress, that they have a reproductive season in the spring, and the big swings in the temperature shorten that season. So, you know, in the wintertime, it's cool, and they shut down and don't reproduce. As spring arrives, they kind of, their brains kickstart, and the hormones get going, and they start reproducing. But with warming oceans and also the extremes in temperature, they're having a shorter reproductive season. And so here's basically what Delgado said when I talked to him at his lab.
Our current theory as to why nearshore conch are reproductively inactive is that they have a truncated reproductive season.
So what he says basically is this Goldilocks spring season is just too short and that climate change is shifting that. The other thing, too, is that water in the Gulf of Mexico is warming faster than the global average. One study found that it was twice as fast. And those inshore conchs, the water there is heavily influenced by the Gulf and Florida Bay, whereas the offshore conchs are closer to the Gulf Stream, which is, you know, a fast-moving current. So the water there gets flushed more and it's cooler.
Okay. So when you were on this boat trip with these researchers, what did you guys find? Did you find good news for the queen conch?
Well, so again, going back to 2000, they did find success when they moved conchs initially. They had moved about 400 back then, and within a few months, they started reproducing and the herd started growing. At that point, that's when they pivoted, trying to figure out what it was that was causing it. So now that they know, what they're going to do is run kind of a pilot study. When we went out, it was the first time they had moved the conchs, so they've got like 3 populations of conch offshore, and they're going to measure the difference between the herds that have conchs added and those that don't. And they've got some retirees and students helping out. And over the next year, they'll see what happens. They think that they'll get good results. But that's, you know, one of the things they're going to have to test and see.
Are there potential pitfalls to this strategy? I mean, I can't imagine that the oceans are going to get much cooler.
Right. So that is the problem, is that ocean heat is not going away. And before they did this project, they looked at some data that the University of Miami collected on ocean hotspots. So while we have kind of globally oceans warming off the coast of Florida, there are also these hotspots. And that study forecasts those to spread, which has got Delgado worried. Here's what he said when I asked him about it.
If those trends continue and our sources become affected like nearshore conch are, there's the issue.
Okay, so we've talked about what is going on in Florida. What kind of techniques are happening elsewhere to bring back the queen conch?
Yeah, so in some places like the Turks and Caicos, they've set up a fishing season with limits. You know, the Turks and Caicos imports a huge amount of conch to the U.S., so it's a really important fishery for conchs. But other places have not, like the Dominican Republic and Haiti and Honduras. Those numbers have plummeted, and conch imports are banned in some of those places to try and control the fishery. In the Bahamas, they're looking at expanding marine preserves to protect the reproductive populations. They've done studies to look at where the most reproductive populations are and what kind of boundaries they should set up around those populations or what kind of fishing limits that they should put into place. What's complicated is that, you know, as I've just explained, the fishing rules are really varied. And that gets back to this idea of the larval train, too, and how this population is really interconnected. I mean, we're talking about Florida conchs, but really they're part of this Caribbean-wide population that relies on each other to keep everybody healthy. So a few years ago, some scientists with the Shedd Aquarium discovered a huge population off Quesal Bank in the Bahamas, which has made them really hopeful because it was way bigger than they expected. And if that is a really healthy reproductive population, they could help replenish that larval train.
Yeah, let's cross our fingers about that. So as we've talked about a little bit, queen conch aren't just beautiful and iconic, but people also eat them. Is it possible to balance conservation with farming and fishing?
I mean, that is a question that the Bahamas is trying to figure out right now because it is such a big draw to tourism, and it's the national dish of the Bahamas. In Florida, there are too few to harvest, and this year the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration actually increased their status to threatened because the population is so small and because the threats from climate change are increasing. So they've looked at trying to set up conch farms and harvesting conch, but they have not had much success with that. And so now Florida Atlantic University and NOAA are actually taking a second look at those farming practices and is there a better way to set up a hatchery? There's a test lab in Puerto Rico right now. The goal of that is to release 2,000 conchs into the wild if they can successfully reproduce those conchs in the lab.
Jenny Stiletovich is the environment editor at WLRN in Miami, Florida. Jenny, thanks so much for telling us all about the queen conch.
Well, thanks for having me.
And if you want to read more about this story and see some really beautiful images of queen conch, go to our website, sciencefriday.com/conch. That's C-O-N-C-H. That's all the time that we have for now. A lot of folks helped make the show happen this week, including
Jordan Smudgick,
Charles Bergquist,
George Harper,
Emma Gomez,
Sandy Roberts,
Robin Kasmer,
and many more. Tomorrow, we'll talk about why the small intestine may be the key to understanding gut health. But for now, I'm Sci-Fry producer Kathleen Davis. Stay cool out there.